This is the Doug Haldeman Show, brought to you by the Real Estate Radio Network.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Doug Haldeman. You're always welcome to contact me directly by texting or calling me on our off-air number at 314-472-DOUG. Again, that's 314-472-DOUG, D-O-U-G, which is 3684. Be sure and like us on our Facebook page. Just search for The Doug Haldeman Show on Facebook. And you could also reach out to us on our website at DougHaldeman.com. That's D-O-U-G-H-A-L-D-E-M-A-N.com. So on The Doug Haldeman Show, we always want to interview experts within the area of real estate and finance. And today we have a unique opportunity to interview one of my favorite mentors and somebody who's taught me more about finance than anybody else out there. I want to welcome Barry Habib to the show. Welcome, Barry.
Thanks, Doug. You're way too kind.
Well, I tell you what, just everything you've given back to the mortgage and finance industry is great. And all of that has trickled down to the consumers in just all the little lessons that you've taught us over the years. I was a certified mortgage planning specialist, and I know you produced a lot of the content for that. So definitely appreciate that. And right now, you're the CEO of MBS Highway. And why don't you give us a quick background on what MBS Highway is?
MBS Highway helps people within the real estate and mortgage industry understand what's going on in the economy and specifically how it affects interest rates for them so they can better assist their customers in telling them whether they should lock their mortgage loans or float their mortgage loans and take advantage of pricing. It also educates them on the overall economy. And really, when you think about it, the business that we're in isn't just the mortgage business, it's the business of money, and we try and help people understand how money works.
Well, on the Doug Haldeman Show, our mission is to raise the level of fiscal literacy for consumers that listen to the show, and you in turn have done that because you've raised the level of fiscal literacy among mortgage professionals, so we then can teach those same techniques and those same philosophies. So thank you for passing that down, and you've really helped that movement of raising that level of fiscal literacy for the mortgage industry. How long have you done that?
Well, when I had first started talking about understanding the financial markets and being financially literate, it was almost frowned upon back in the early 90s. And I built a very strong business model myself. I was the top originator in the early 90s for a couple of years within the United States and built a very strong company and started to teach, and it really began to take off. I didn't realize that not very many people within the mortgage industry understood the financial markets. So there was a niche for me to work with mortgage professionals, started speaking about it, and as you know, been a regular on most of the major financial networks like CNBC for now more than 20 years, my goodness. People began to realize that this is important, and it's helped them provide better service to their customers. And you guys are such enormous advocates. People that listen to your show benefit from your wisdom and your understanding and how we can look at the financial markets to help us make better decisions. Because look, mortgage is the largest financial transaction people make in their lives. And right now, so many people shop for it like they're shopping for a flat screen TV. It's not all about just rate. It's important, but how much is the loan amount? When should you lock in? What should you do about planning for your future? Does this program help you get your kids through college? Does it help you meet your retirement goals? There's so much to think about, and professionals like you guys help people make the right decision. But there's a lot driving the markets now if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I know on Squawk Box, I've listened to you recently in your appearances there, Squawk Box and CNBC, and you always stay up to date on what's going on in the markets. And this week, I know we had a Fed meeting. What were the results, the key things that you saw that came out of the Fed meeting this week?
It's like a Control-C, Control-V, or for you Apple fans out there, Command-C, Command-V. You know, cut and paste, cut and paste. Two-day meeting, but changed one sentence. The one sentence they did change, though, however, does have some meaning. The Fed basically said in the past that, you know, here's the amount of asset purchases that we're going to do. Then recently they changed it to say, look, we can taper that down using, so to speak, a dimmer switch to taper it down as economic conditions improve. So it's not a cold turkey cut off from quantitative easing. This week, that when we got the last meeting, we see the Fed come out with something new and saying, hey, we can actually increase purchases of assets. And when the Fed said this, I think that this was prompted by the fact that economic data has not been as strong. We have not seen a really solid recovery. And they're concerned that the economy is lagging. And they pretty much blamed the legislators for really choking off financial growth based on, you have to look at things like, healthcare reform, and you have to look at things like, overregulation, Dodd-Frank. And I believe that it's taking its toll on the economy. And that's what I think the Fed believes, and that's what they're kind of relaying to lawmakers in Washington. And also one other thing they're kind of talking about is get this debt problem addressed.
The debt problem is a massive problem. In case you just joined us, you're listening to The Doug Haldeman Show on FM News Talk 97.1. We're speaking with Barry Habib, financial analyst and economist, the CEO of MBS Highway, and also the chief market strategist for Residential Finance Corporation. So, Barry, with this debt problem, I mean, the Fed was giving a slap on the wrist to the legislators for the way that they're spending money and the tax increases. What do you think that their solution for that would be?
I think that the solution is very easy. When we first came out with Social Security, the life expectancy was 67, and Social Security began at 65. Today, life expectancy is 79, and maybe you get Social Security beginning at 67. There's a math problem there. When you also consider the fact that those life expectancy date ranges are from birth, theoretically, somebody who's at age 65 should exceed the life expectancy currently at 79 because they've made it through 65 without dying. So
right.
Well, those averages actually go up. So you have a smaller pool of people working to pay these things. Nobody wants to talk about Social Security. The AARP is a very, very strong lobby. But it's math. If you cannot continue down this path, the problem gets longer and longer, and politicians kick the can down the road. You just have to adjust those retirement ages to a higher level. Nobody wants to hear it, but when we don't want to hear that we've got to do some of the things we've got to do to get by also, right?
We all have to do it as individuals. If we don't make the tough changes, we've watched corporations and we've watched individuals start to deleverage over the last 5 years while our government's done the opposite.
Absolutely, and that's why you see the stock market is responding to corporate profits increasing because corporations have tightened their belts and tried to cope. But the government does not know how to do that, unfortunately. As you mentioned, we've done that internally. Families, households have taken down debt. Families have cut credit card spending. We've made tough choices and sacrifices. The government needs to understand that that's something that they need to do as well.
Well, and as individuals, we're not looking for reelection. And legislators have the wrong thing driving them in their decision-making. Nobody wants to make the tough decisions.
You hit the nail on the head. That's the decisions are driven by, are they popular? Will I get reelected? Not what's good. Kind of like a divorced couple where initially they're both vying for the child's love. Maybe they each might spoil the child to try and get favor, but they're not doing the child long-term good if that were to continue.
So long-term with this debt buildup, what happens to our country if we continue on our current path?
Well, evidently you can have debt, grow and continue to drag without a catastrophe happening for a very long time. You look at Japan, Japan is 200% of GDP plus as far as their debt levels. We're approaching 100% of GDP. The problems that happen is that Japan's an accident waiting to happen. And I've discovered that accidents that are waiting to happen, they usually happen.
Eventually they do.
And there's an old thought process that I have come to really embrace as time goes on. And that's, it always takes longer than you ever thought it would take for it to happen. But once it does, it happens faster than you could ever have imagined. And that's the problem that we see unraveling in Europe. For those individuals who've traveled there, if you've traveled to Spain, if you've traveled to Greece and other parts of Europe, and these daily riots that are in the streets that are now commonplace that we're kind of isolated from, this is the socialist type policies that are unsustainable, and they lead to higher and higher rates of unemployment. And especially when you talk about under 25, 50% of them unemployed, what are they going to do? They've got a lot of energy. They're going to riot. They're going to cause show their disapproval. And this leads to terrible conditions.
Well, and if we train people to have an entitlement mentality, they're never going to vote to give up their entitlements.
You're 100% right. Bingo. Yeah. The sad part about it is we've made the entitlements out of love. Look, of course, some people deserve entitlements. Listen, heaven forbid, we'd never want to put our shoes in the position of someone who's unfortunate enough and who's trying hard, who's disabled. They need our help, and we should give them our help. But here's the interesting thing. In the last 4.5 years, the number of people getting disability benefits has more than doubled. Now, I don't think the workplace has become that much more dangerous in the past 4 years than in history. I think that there's other factors potentially at play where it's easier to obtain these. And because of other factors that are out there, it's just, look, once you're on the dole, once you're receiving government checks, it's hard to come off it. And what the government really doesn't understand is how devastating this is to the individual. You're not helping the individual, because imagine an employer. Would any employer really want to, in today's day and age, hire somebody who's been out of the workforce for 2 years? They're so far behind. How do you teach somebody anymore?
Right.
Their skills are gone.
Almost any industry will pass you by.
You bet. So you almost can't get back into the workforce. And that's why with these extended unemployment benefits, with making it easier to collect disability, make it easier to game the system, make it easier to get government checks, it doesn't work in the long run. It creates a nation of dependency. The government has the Department of Agriculture, right? And if you go to the zoo, it says, literally, don't feed the animals because they may become dependent.
Right.
The same Department of Agriculture works for the government who prints that sign should understand that it's the same with people.
That's a great metaphor. And Barry, if you have time to stick around, I have more questions for you. So I'm going to ask the question that the number one lesson about personal finance that I learned from Financial Barry Habib, the answer to that and more are coming up. You'll listen to Doug Haldeman Show on FM News Talk 97.1.